and the teaching of Christ Church.
Presta in the afternoon, weekdays from 4 to 6 on 990 WDEO.
Radio for Catholic and other Christians. This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio, and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
With the New York Times in one hand and the Catechism of the Catholic Church in the other, Al Cresta is ready for conversations of consequence.
Yeah, people wonder a lot about the new evangelization.
You're re-evangelizing the de-Christianized.
This mission is too important for me to allow you to jeopardize it.
The vast number of Catholics who've been sacramentalized but not evangelized.
I'm talking about God, the devil, hell, heaven.
To be Catholic is to evangelize.
He's absolutely right.
Broadcasting from the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and taking a closer Catholic look at current events, issues, and ideas. This is Cresta in the Afternoon.
Al, it's always a joy to be with you.
What is your quest?
Build the church, bless the nation.
We are go for launch.
10, 9.
I just want to tell you both, good luck. We're all counting on you.
Let's do this.
Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
Hey, good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta, and we've got tremendous number of guests, but great guests coming up, and strange things, too. I mentioned the other day John Hopkins University student saying no to Chick-fil-A, not yay to Chick-fil-A, but nay to Chick-fil-A, and the student government there really has voted to prevent, they don't have any power, but there's a way of making believe they have power. They have voted to prevent Chick-fil-A from opening a restaurant on campus. Now, why? Well, they cite Chick-fil-A's CEO, Dan Cathy's opposition to gay marriage, saying the presence of a store on campus would be, I love this phrase, microaggression. Microaggression against LGBT members of the community. I'd ask you to think of how far we've come from the kind of days when black Americans suffered lynchings and all manner of indignity in the South during the Jim Crow era. Can you imagine Martin Luther King Jr. telling a business not to open up not because it has negative policies towards black Americans, not because it has a reputation for being hostile to black Americans, but because some CEO in the organization once said some negative remark about black people, and then saying that the presence of that business there would create microaggression against black men and women. You know, that this is subject to so much ridicule, but of course the ridicule, in this case, the ridicule is not going to help. It just makes you shake your head. All right, Abraham. Abraham didn't have any microaggressions committed against him. He was himself not all that politically correct. He, in fact, lied to protect himself instead of his wife under one occasion. But yet Abraham is called the father of faith, the father of works, the father of faith and works. Steve Ray is here to join us, looking through the footprints of God in the life of Abraham. We're going to examine one of the great biblical figures, the great patriarch, Abraham, somebody who is in all, if you had to do a drama on any of the great biblical characters, Abraham would be one of the first stories you'd tell. Abraham, David, of course, the story of Jesus. But we're going to look at the story of Abraham with Steve Ray. Also coming up today, we'll let you hear a little bit more of yesterday's arguments before the Supreme Court on same-sex so-called marriage. And Holly Pirlo joins us once again with Mother's Day coming up. We thought it would be a good idea to take a look at the whole idea of motherhood. And Holly's joined us before on a mother's rule of life, and I enjoyed the conversation with her so much that we try to give her a call at least once a year as we approach Mother's Day. And then we'll talk about friends of mine, a family in Ann Arbor, Michigan, here where we broadcast, whose 19-year-old son was in Nepal during the horrific earthquake that they're still digging out from. And the 24-hour period in which they and their friends, were having to pray a double time here to ensure, as best we could, Owen's well-being. But it's a great story, and I've asked Ken and Patty Cousineau to join me here a little bit later today. So all that's coming up on today's Crest in the Afternoon. But first, it's the headlines with Nick Tom.
Thank you very much, Al. Welcome, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Wednesday, April 29th. It is the Feast of St. Catherine of Siena, and today's news is sponsored in part by Charity Mobile, supporting pro-life and Catholic causes at charitymobile.com. The Pontifical Council Cor Unum, the charitable arm of the Holy See, has pledged $100,000 in immediate relief to victims of the earthquake in Nepal. The donation from Cor Unum, which will be relayed through the local church to support aid operations, work with the homeless, and medical care for survivors. The $100,000 sum is a first contribution, the Vatican said, with other Episcopal conferences around the world also promising donations. Hillary Clinton is calling for sweeping reform in the U.S. justice system.
The inequities that persist in our justice system undermine this shared vision of what America can be and should be.
In a speech at Columbia University in New York today, the Democratic presidential hopeful called for body cameras for every police department in the country. Clinton said it is time for wisdom as yet another American community is reeling over the death of a young black man. The former Secretary of State told the gathering, quote, "What we've seen in Baltimore tears at our soul," end quote, referring to the death of Freddie Gray while in police custody. A French public school will not let a Muslim girl attend class when she wears a long black skirt. The 15-year-old has been sent home to change twice by school officials who say the skirt is too openly religious for secular France. One official admits the girl always removes her veil before entering the school grounds in a town of about 150 miles northeast of Paris, but the school's head teacher says the long skirt conspicuously shows religious affiliation. The case is generating a storm of comments on social media, where one person tweeted that if a white girl wore the skirt, it would be hippie chic, and questioned why it's conspicuous when worn by a Muslim. And Nigerian troops rescued nearly 300 girls and women from Boko Haram militants, but the group did not include the schoolgirls famously kidnapped from Chibok last year. The army announced it was interviewing the abducted girls and women. Troops destroyed and cleared four camps during the offensive. 219 of the Chibok girls kidnapped last April are still missing. And now your fascinating fact for the day. The Muppet Show was banned from Saudi Arabia TV because one of its stars is a pig. Reporting for Ave Maria Radio News, I'm Nick Tom.
No more chicken at Johns Hopkins University. The Student Government Association there voting this week against a proposal to potentially bring Chick-fil-A to campus because of the owner's support for traditional marriage. They have a resolution saying prospective and current students, staff, faculty, and other visitors who are members of the LGBT community would be subjected to the microaggression of supporting current or future Chick-fil-A development plans.
Microaggression, that's a rather new phrase for us to master now. And to help us understand what that means, down at Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, I've got Andrew Guernsey. He's a junior there, double majoring in political science and classics. In his freshman year, Andrew refounded Johns Hopkins University's pro-life student group, Voice for Life. And he serves now as president for Voice for Life there. Andrew, good to have you back.
It's great to be on the show, Al. Thanks for having me.
What's microaggression?
Microaggressions are, it ultimately goes back to cultural Marxism, but it's the idea essentially that any speech or that would impact a disadvantaged group in that theory amounts to speech that need not be tolerated on campus. Oh. And, of course, they extend that concept to include a speech by social and religious conservatives.
And so now it also applies to the presence of a business like Chick-fil-A because it's a trigger for homosexual students who, when they see a Chick-fil-A, will feel violated?
That's right.
Or micro-violated?
Well, actually, it's not just the Chick-fil-A. It's the idea that there might be a Chick-fil-A that would amount to a microaggression.
That's right, because there's not a Chick-fil-A there, right?
That's right. This is about a hypothetical brick-and-mortar store that some students suggested. And they said that amounted to a microaggression.
It's hard. I love college campus. I love college students. But I am increasingly feeling alienated from this world there. Tell me that this isn't very popular.
Well, I wish I could say that, but it seems many students are definitely drinking the Kool-Aid when it comes to the idea that people who they disagree with ought to be silenced. So I told this to the student government when they voted on the bill. I spoke to the student government and I told them, this is a hypothetical culture war you're waging, but the real victims are not nameless. They're conservative Catholics, they're conservative Muslims, Jews, Hindus, who do not subscribe to your dogmas that are being told that they are not welcome on campus.
Wow. Now, is this something that what percentage of students would you say would get worked up about this issue? That would think that this is a good thing, that they'd feel moral indignation if Chick-fil-A were considering coming there.
It seems that the student government is out of touch largely with the student body on this issue, I think. I mean, our dining options, there's certainly always a target of criticism. And banning a Chick-fil-A for its delicious chicken when the restaurant itself has never or never has discriminated in its service, it amounts to thought police.
It's like you mentioned, student government is hot on this thing, but you think they're out of touch with the students overall?
I would think so. We used to have a Chick-fil-A served at all the sports games as late as 2012, and they would sell out at halftime.
Yeah.
But now that they were discussing a brick and mortar, they said that crossed the line.
Were there many faculty that came out and spoke on this, or did they traditionally stay away from student government conversation?
The number of conservatives in the faculty at Hopkins I can count on one hand, and most of them are, well, two of them, but Dr. Ben Carson is on the emeritus faculty, and a couple others are not as outspoken.
This kind of thing has been creeping around for a decade and a half, but it just seems to be getting worse. I'm also trying to gauge whether these are extreme instances or are these instances of a growing momentum.
Well, just last week they tried to ban a fetal model table from the spring fair that we've hosted with our pro-life group.
A fetal model table? Wait a minute.
So this is the little babies that are made of, you know, rubber. They said
these are not the bloody butchered babies.
No, not at all. These are the medically accurate. And it's been there for the past 30 years. An older lady, I guess, has hosted the table, and we've helped out for almost two decades now with the pro-life group at Hopkins. And they decided this year that it was too triggering. It was their quote, and offensive.
Oh.
And we were on the front page of Fox News because they're banning science from Hopkins.
That's a bad thought. That's a terrible thought. How can that be? I mean, look, these fetal models are, first of all, they are instructive. Who doesn't marvel when they see these things lined up, you know?
Right. We had it this weekend, in fact, and the sky didn't fall, believe it or not. And actually, little kids would come up, and they were the ones that loved these little models. And they were saying, oh, look at the cute little babies. But no, the adults in the room are the ones who can't handle it.
The word microaggression, does that actually show up in certain kinds of political theories or social science analysis?
It's increasingly showing up in the whole domain that's come to be known as privilege theory.
Yeah, okay.
It's the idea, essentially, that we need to dig in and find hidden bias and hidden privileges. But what it does amount to is, as we saw in the resolution from the student government, is clear thought policing.
Oh, well. It amazes me. I'm stunned that they would think it worth their time. Where do they get do they expect to get kudos from particular professors or non-government organizations that they're trying to land a job with? Or do they do this because they need to find a cause of moral indignation? It makes them feel better if they can point to some bandit or some bad Babadook or something.
Well, some people have even drawn comparisons with what's been happening in Indiana, where you have everyone getting upset over nothing, when nothing has happened.
It's another Chick-fil-A
story.
They're
all over hypotheticals. Yeah, all these hypothetical discriminations now are being discussed, when in reality the people who are getting hurt and marginalized are the Christians who are being told to shut up because they simply believe that marriage is between moms and dads.
Yeah.
And in fact, one senator said that. He said, this amounts to hate speech. And another senator said, maybe we should allow it because the CEO of Chick-fil-A might die and be replaced by someone who supports same-sex marriage. It got that bad at the hearing. Amazing.
It is amazing to me. Well, let me tell you, thanks. This is keep up the good fight down there. There's so much. Life is short, and there's so many outstanding and wonderful things to do that the thought of being preoccupied with this kind of policing of other people's attitudes is stunning to me. It just seems to be a very unrewarding life. So I appreciate you pointing it out to us, Andrew. We'll talk again.
Thanks for having me on the show, Al.
Yeah, hey,
privilege.
Let us know whenever you come across stuff like this. Andrew Guernsey is a junior at Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, telling us. Sorry, let me. We didn't spend a lot of time on the Indiana University South Bend story, but there you've got again the same kind of thing. There's a change.org is the website. And there's a movement there to ban Chick-fil-A on campus. So here, one of the reasons is because in the past, and I don't know if it's still the case, but Chick-fil-A did have charitable donations to groups like the Ruth Institute and Focus on the Family. And then, as you know, Dan Cathy, the CEO and president of Chick-fil-A, has made a statement in the past about seeing marriage as between a man and a woman. He was hardly rabid on this. I mean, he just said what most Americans actually feel, and that is that, well, look, marriage is what marriage is, and it's basically opposite sex couples. And yet here, at not only Johns Hopkins University, but Indiana University at South Bend, you've got people who are actually going out of their way to vote on these hypothetical instances. Unbelievable. A good reason why sending your kids off to college requires that they are, first of all, disciples before they get there.
Did you know that Ave Maria Town in Southwest Florida is really growing?
Tell me about it.
Ave Maria truly is one of the nation's fastest-growing master-planned new home communities.
Is that because there's no snow?
Well, the weather sure helps, but Ave Maria, Florida is a unique place.
How so?
The town of Ave Maria has been designed as a hometown for the 21st century, a place where residents of different generations and backgrounds can find all they need to live life to the fullest. School, shopping, employment opportunities, and more. In addition, the presence of Ave Maria University, a Catholic university that is both excellent and affordable.
Sounds great. What else?
Houses are being sold starting in the low 200s with several communities to choose from. There's a private Catholic K-12 school along with golf, bike trails, a fitness center, not to mention several daily masses and adoration within walking distance.
So how can I arrange a visit?
Call Carol at 239-249-2111. That's Carol Carpenter at Berkshire Hathaway, 239-249-2111.
Come to where the flavor is. Come to Marlboro Country.
Marlboro Man was the most effective ad icon in history, and a disproportionate number of the Marlboro men died of lung cancer. Was this the most successful ad campaign or death campaign in history? Teresa, Tommy, and I look at the conflict between image and reality and the power of advertising to persuade us to act in defiance of reason. Spend an entire day with us examining how the advertising, entertainment, and news industries create a clutter of unreality and illusion that distract us from Christ's call to discipleship. That's Saturday, May 9th, from 9:30 to 4:30 at the Ford Motor Company Conference and Event Center in Dearborn. Lifting the curtain on the illusion industries and how they create spiritual competitors to the Catholic faith. It's Saturday, May 9th in Dearborn. Go to AveMariaRadio.net and learn more. Hope to see you there.
This Ave Maria radio program is brought to you in part by St. Gregory Retreat Centers, the new standard for recovery. St. Gregory Retreat Centers offers substance abuse treatment options using traditional Catholic teaching about virtue and access to daily Mass and reconciliation, combined with the latest evidence-based practices in substance abuse. More information is available at 888-778-5833 or online at stgregoryctr.com. Cresta in the Afternoon is brought to you in part by the Ave Maria Mutual Funds. Investment funds that are designed and screened to be pro-life and pro-family. Six different Ave Maria mutual funds are available to help you reach your long-term investment objectives, smart investing, and Catholic values. The number to learn more about the Ave Maria mutual funds is 866-AVE-MARIA. That's 866-283-6274 or at AveMariaFunds.com.
Ever thought you'd make a bundle by trading in or selling your used vehicle only to find out it's worth a dinner for two? Well, it's much more valuable to donate your vehicle to Ave Maria Radio. Thousands of Americans donate their vehicle each year. The donation to Ave Maria is easy, tax-deductible, and supports our efforts to evangelize. A year from now, will you remember that dinner or your gracious and selfless donation? Go to AveMariaRadio.net to find out more. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
Today's programming on Ave Maria Radio is made possible in part by our day sponsor, in memory of Henry Vinke, a kind, gentle, faithful man who was the father of 10 children with grandchildren and great-grandchildren almost too numerous to count. One of his children became a priest. Henry, called Harry by his friends, loved his children, his land, and the game of baseball.
Good to be with you. Motherhood and homeschooling, that's not... When we were raising our kids, and Sally was bearing most of the burden for the homeschooling, you had to make adjustments. And so you took your motherhood seriously. You took your homeschooling seriously. You took your responsibilities as a wife seriously. And you still had the house and the laundry, right, and all this other stuff. Well, Holly, my guest, Holly Pirillo, knows exactly what that's about. And as she pursued her pursuit of God led her to come up with a way of handling this. She's given it to us in a wonderful little book that we've discussed before on this program called A Mother's Rule of Life, How to Bring Order to Your Home and Peace to Your Soul. Holly, good to have you back.
Good to be back with you, Al. It's been a long time.
It has been a long time, and I'm surprised because I've mentioned your book more than we've interviewed. So I've told others about it because I remember when we first talked, I believed that this could be of tremendous help to moms who may not believe that they can order their life in a fruitful way. I don't know how often I've heard over the years from busy moms, I don't have time, I don't have time, I don't have time. So yeah. Talk to me about your own experience first, then we'll go into the lesson of the book.
Okay, well, I was a typical homeschooling mom living here on Prince Edward Island. I had 5 children, ages 8 and under. I was homeschooling. We had a nice big old 2-story house, well, 3 stories, actually. And, I was busy and overwhelmed and discouraged.
Yep.
And, I felt like I was in a maze, really, trying to accomplish all of my duties and still find time for my husband and still find time for myself.
Yep.
And, when I did take time for myself, I either felt guilty or rebellious, because I just needed that time, And it was a very frustrating period of time for me because I just wanted a nice, peaceful little family life, and I didn't know how I was going to get that, you know, and...
Yeah, I think part of the problem is you want to do things right. You want to do everything right. And all of a sudden, there's so much to do, and you might even get it done, but you don't feel you've done it right. You're just overwhelmed. So what happened when you realized that this was caving in on you?
Well, I prayed a lot, and I tried a lot of things, and everything failed. And one, it was the beginning of the new millennium, January 1st, the year 2000, and by that point, my frustration level hit full force. I pounded the table. I said to Philip, we're sending the kids to school. I don't care anymore. I'm sick of this, right? And, you know, he was overwhelmed because I was vehement, you know, and he suggested I pray on it, and I said, I'm sick of praying. I prayed over and over, and he calmed me down. He got me to pray, and, you know, that was, I think, a Saturday, and by Tuesday in my prayer, he made me promise to take 1 week, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So by that Tuesday, I came across this wonderful scripture verse, you know, the 5 loaves and the 2 fish. We've heard the story a million times now, you know, as Catholics.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was reading over it, I realized, oh, my gosh, this is so similar to my situation. Here are the apostles looking over 5,000 people. Jesus says, feed them. And they go, like, what? You know, like, how are we going to do that? And I sensed that bafflement, which was the same bafflement, you know, that puzzling that I had in my own life. And you know, then I realized, you know, Jesus took their meager efforts, right, their little 5 loaves, 2 fish, and he blessed it, and it was all better. And I thought, oh, my gosh, I just have to do what I do, and, you know, Jesus will come along and solve everything. And so I was quite thrilled by the prospect, and I had a new hope, you know.
Okay.
The problem was, of course, that months went by, and nothing changed.
Mm.
The house was still a mess. I still wasn't on top of things. I was still overburdened, overwhelmed, discouraged, and I thought, God, you know, Jesus, you lied to me, you know. And I didn't want to say that, but that's how I felt. And then I went to a conference, and a woman was talking about this MOTH program, managers of their home. She was talking about schedules and how orderly her house was, you know, and I thought, right, you know, sure. You know. You don't have any kids. Well, she did have the same amount as me, and, you know, well, you know, this is brand spanking new, like, you know, it's a week old and you're still in the honeymoon phase. Well, no, she'd been doing it for over 3 months. And, you know, everything I tried to do to shoot her down was unshot.
Yes.
And but I still didn't want to do it because what she was talking about was a schedule, and I did not want to do a schedule. Like, schedules were so limiting and restricting, and oh, my gosh, like, who could stand that?
Right.
Until the next day, and it was Sunday, you know, and I just wanted a day off, and the house was a mess, and the dishes were piled, and the laundry was piled, and the kids were after me, and I just wanted some of my Sabbath, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, this isn't working either, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
I'm
going to have to start looking at some form of a schedule. And so I did look at a schedule. I pulled a basic one together that very night. I started the next day. By supper time, the house was clean. The homeschooling had been done. The kids were happy. I had time to myself. Like, it was miraculous. And I thought, wow, it dawned on me in my prayer that night. Yes, Jesus is going to bless my efforts, but he has to have efforts to bless.
Mm.
Right?
So,
and I realized, I'm like a CEO of my home. My marriage is my mission, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I had to attack my family life with the same dedication and concentration that a CEO was heading a corporation.
Sure, right? So you had this realization on a Sunday night, was that right? I mean, you kind of evaluated Sunday night that you had got this thing started.
I assessed everything.
Yeah. And so you did it one day? Did you do it 2 days, 3 days? How long did it take you to make it your rhythm?
I did it, the first day I did it just the basic needs, you know, like when is breakfast, when is lunch, when is supper.
Okay.
Right? What chores am I going to do around what mealtime? Just started there, right? What time am I going to start homeschooling?
Uh-huh.
And so it just worked. It was like a breeze. So I did it day two. And it worked, right?
Yeah.
And I did it day three. And by then, I'm, you know, the thrill is not there. By day three, by day four, I'm feeling like I'm in a box, yeah. Right? That I'm tight and I'm structured and restricted. And mm-hmm. And I fell off of it for a day, and everything fell apart again. And I thought, oh my gosh, I can't stand that either. So I hopped back on it, and I said, Jesus, you better help me, because you know the only thing I wanted to do was go sit down with a good book and a coffee, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't want to do my duties. I didn't want to do what I was supposed to do. Mm-hmm. I wanted to do what I wanted to do.
Right.
And so I carry on, yes.
Yeah, so where do you go from there? You've tried the tight schedule, right?
Yeah.
And that's not working. So now what do you do?
Okay, well, I guess what I realized was that my scheduling, there had to be something deeper. This was a vocation. It couldn't be impossible. God didn't want either my house a mess or me a mess.
Mm-hmm.
He had a plan somewhere. There had to be order. And upon what was I going to base my efforts, right? And it came to mind about a priest who had told me early on in my marriage about the five priorities of family life. And he talked about them. He said they were in hierarchical order, and that any family that didn't follow these in hierarchical order was out of order. And he said, so the five priorities, the first one was prayer. Then your second one was your person. Your third one was your partner. The fourth P was your parenting, mm-hmm. and the fifth was your provider role. And he said, you know, men tend to put the provider role above everything else,
right.
And that throws the family out of whack, and women tend to put their parenting above everything else. And then, you know, hubbies is ignored, and prayer life doesn't happen, and there's no free time, you know. So this priest had talked about this hierarchical order, and I thought, well, okay, that's what I'm going to need to then base my scheduling upon. Maybe it's because I'm not scheduling properly,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm still putting parenting or housework above everything else, right?
Yeah.
So I'm not getting my strength. So I changed it all around, and I started with prayer. And I thought to myself, you know, what's a reasonable way to, what's reasonable for me as a young mother then with a daily prayer life? And I, you know, I figured, well, morning, evening prayer, a little bit of scripture, rosary, you know, and I went through. And then person, you know, what's reasonable for my health, you know, and so I just walked through these things, and it brought up a different schedule than the one I had originally done, with lots of time for me to have a little break here and there, and you know, time for my reading and my piano playing, and you know,
yeah.
So it was quite interesting, and
So you're developing. Are you at this point? Are you thinking about this as a rule rather than a schedule?
Yeah. Because I tied it in. I had heard about a rule of life before. I'd only found them for religious,
mm-hmm.
and here I was a lay woman, and so I realized that whole notion of a rule of life is different than just a schedule. There's two elements. There's the spirit of the rule. It's like the charism or the mission, you know. And then that is reflected in that practical schedule, right? And so they go together, the practical and the theoretical. And that's what I realized. All of my previous schedules had been based on strange things, like, you know, maybe wanting to get some sewing in that day. You know, things weren't in order. They weren't in line with what my mission was and what my married vocation was, right? And once I started to get into what is my married vocation, then the order started to come.
Wow. Now, we've got about a minute and a half here. When did you start that? How long ago?
I think that, well, that would have been the year 2000
when
I started it.
So that's 15 years ago.
15 years.
What has changed in your thinking since then, or has it worked so well?
Okay, well, I'll tell you. There have been things that have changed. My motherhood, there have been other challenges that arise. You know, some people say I can't do a rule of life because my kids are too young, and I say that could very well be the easiest time because you're still in control.
Huh.
You know, over the years I found, you know, I had hepatitis for 3 months, for example. Well, that blows any rule out of the water. And,
sure.
You know, little things. I did my master's, you know, that took some extra time out of my rule, and my kids grew up.
Yeah.
And once your kids grew up and they're all out at different times, that changes your rule. So I've come to understand there's two or three ways to live a rule. Mm-hmm. First of all, it's like phonics. So, you know, every time you read, you're using that phonics, mm-hmm. right?
Yes, yes.
And then secondly, you can do it with a clock, you can do it with a progression, or you can do it with a checklist, as long as you're getting those things in, eh?
Holly, hold it there. We'll come back if we can. Spend a little more time on it. My guest, Holly Perlow, is the author of what I think is one of the most helpful books published in this area called A Mother's Rule of Life.
I think I'm pregnant.
Really? What are you going to do?
What choice do I have?
She has a choice. It's ICUDetroit.com. Image Clear Ultrasound, or ICU, in the womb. We bring hope to women in need. And where there's hope, there are life-affirming choices. We are Michigan's first mobile ultrasound unit, servicing the Detroit metro area, providing free pregnancy tests, ultrasounds, and non-judgmental peer counseling. All services and care take place in our spacious mobile unit, which has a private exam room with a state-of-the-art 3D ultrasound and a separate lounge area for family or friends. If your church, congregation, or youth group is interested in learning more about this ministry, please call 248-620-5353 or visit us at ICUDetroit.com. That's the letters ICUDetroit.com or 248-620-5353. ICUDetroit.com.
Have a First Communion or a confirmation coming up in your family or circle of friends? Our Lady of Grace bookstore has a beautiful selection of gifts to help them celebrate these special sacraments and strengthen their life in Christ. And don't forget the graduates on your list. Choose from inspirational books, videos, jewelry, and a new selection of contemporary Christian music CDs. We're located in Ann Arbor at US 23 and M14, inside Domino's Farms Office Park at Lobby C. Visit us at OurLadyOfGraceBookstore.com or Facebook for hours and directions.
Do you know what your child prays for? I'm not asking if your child says their prayers at night. I'm asking what your child asks Jesus in prayer. The men of the Sacred Hearts come into your home and show you how to have your family take the time to pray together every day.
It's time to regain our most precious gift from God.
Our children.
Visit menofthesacredhearts.org.
Hi, this is Father John Ricardo, inviting you to join me as we explore some of the deepest questions that arise in our hearts, questions that shape the way we think, the way we speak, and the way we live. For all of these questions, Christ is the answer.
Our individual and corporate relationship with our Lord, our relationship with the church, the precepts of the church, our relationship with the world and the culture that surrounds us. Father John Ricardo discusses these things and more, all from the Catholic perspective, on Christ is the Answer. Listen to Christ is the Answer Wednesday evenings at 8, Saturday afternoons at 5, and Sunday mornings at 11 on 990 WDEL, 1440 WMAX, and AveMariaRadio.net on the Internet.
Christ is the way, the truth, and the life. He is the image of the invisible God. He points us to our destiny. He reveals the dignity of the human person. He is the one who makes known the Father. Christ is the Answer.
Christ is the Answer is brought to you by the Ave Maria Communications Guild.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popcha.
People like to bash the faithful with statistics. For instance, you've probably heard that studies show that Christians divorce at the same rate as others. Or how about the report that claims that Christians are bad tippers? Well, according to the University of Connecticut sociologist Bradley Wright, statements like these simply don't apply to people who actually practice their faith. For instance, only 25% of weekly church-going Catholics are divorced, compared to 50% of the general population. As for tipping, a Cornell University study found that church-going Christians tip an average of 17%. Obviously, Christians aren't perfect, but practicing our faith really does give us the grace we need to stand up against the pressures the world can apply. So the next time someone tries to bash your faith with research, take it with a grain of salt. I'm Dr. Greg Popcheck, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. My guest, Holly Perlow, had an insight back in 2000 that eventually brought order to her home and peace to her soul. It's A Mother's Rule of Life, in the name of the book, in fact, that she's published to share those insights with us. And I had asked you, Holly, if in the last 15 years you had made any kind of adaptations or revisions or changes, what have you learned in the 15 years?
Okay, well, I'm going to go back to that analogy of phonics and reading.
Sure.
Because it really explains well where I'm coming from, what I've learned, and how I live now. You know, with phonics, you learn the sounds of the letters, you know, and at first the child who's learning to read spends a lot of time sounding out individual letters, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's like starting a rule. You know, you're focusing a lot on what duties you have and
right.
when you're going to do them and how you're going to do them.
Yep.
And then pretty soon, you know, that child is reading. And they're not focusing so much on what's going on, but they're still doing that work, eh?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so, too, once we get familiar with our rules of life, we're just living that, right? And we're still doing all the same things, but we're not focusing on that as much. We're living our lives. We're living our vocation and our duties, right? And now there's a lot of different ways to do that reading, for example. You know, like I could be reading a Kindle or through my phone or on my computer or in a book, right? Well, there's lots of different ways to have the schedule part of a rule as well, which would be like I originally started with a timetable schedule. You know, at 7:30 I prayed, right?
Mm-hmm.
And really it's probably one of the best tools to reel in a wayward soul like me. That was so whim-based, you know.
Mm-hmm.
To put me on a strict timetable was very, very helpful in disciplining me, you know. But as time goes on and life experiences happen, you know, like illness or master's programs or kids growing up or family crises mm-hmm. or death in the family, you know, then you have to have other ways to fulfill what are effectively still your responsibilities. And a rule of life always focuses on the core responsibilities. So your prayer and your meals and getting your laundry done and spending time with your husband or whatever, you know. So there's, aside from your timetable, you can do something like a progression schedule. You know, this is really good for moms with brand new babies, right? They have to get up and they just start walking through processes, you know, that a certain routines, right? This helps them fulfill their responsibilities. And for other people, you can do things like a checklist. I want to get these things done today. I believe this is what God's calling me to. So you have a checklist mentality and you fit it in. And that might suit certain temperaments, you see.
Yes.
So there's all sorts of different ways. And then, of course, the more that you live this vocation, the more comfortable you, things become automatic. You just start doing things automatically. You're just in habits, right? But very similar to the reading analogy, we don't read for the sake of reading either. We read for the sake of finding the meaning behind those words. And so, too, the rule of life is not for the sake of just fulfilling your physical duties, right? The purpose of it is to bring an order to your soul, as the book says, you know, peace to your soul,
yes.
right?
Yep.
And to bring about the ability, because things are under control, the ability to be recollected,
mm-hmm.
to be aware of God's presence, to accept every duty as coming from his hands or from his mouth, will you please do this, you know?
Yeah.
And the ability to live and walk with Christ right in the middle of our hectic lives because we aren't nuns in quiet monasteries, right?
Right.
And so that's the beauty of the rule of life. It brings about the recollection and the relationship and the intimacy with God the more faithful you are to it.
Now, how can people stay abreast of your work and what you're doing?
I do have a website, mothersruleoflife.com. That's about as far as it goes right now
okay.
because I'm off and on it, you know,
yeah.
but certainly I can be reached through that. And,
okay.
and my email address is holly@mothersruleoflife.com. So people are certainly able to contact me.
Very good. Holly, thank you. Wonderful
oh,
talking
my
with
pleasure.
You again.
Thank you, Al. Take care.
You too. Holly Pirlo, it's called A Mother's Rule of Life, How to Bring Order to Your Home and Peace to Your Soul. We'll have it, of course, posted on the Cresta Guest Archives, too, so you can learn more about it. Many women have told me this has been the most helpful book they've read in helping, again, to organize their priorities in their life. And it's not just a matter of keeping a list, all right? There's much insight in here about how to treat your home like think of a monastic enclosure, if you will. All right, let's switch gears. We now have, of course, the Supreme Court has now heard 2.5 hours of argument on the same-sex so-called marriage issue. And yesterday we played a little portion of it with you. I wanted to let you hear more of the argument today. So let's do that. Let's do that. I want to you to hear. Somebody, a listener, had written me and said, you know, I wish you had taken time to get to the argument about tax exemption. And I think that's a very good point. We didn't get to that yesterday. But it is tied up with this. And so let's go ahead and listen to this exchange between Justice Alito and Solicitor General Donald Verrilli.
In Jones' case, the court held that a college was not entitled to tax-exempt status if it opposed
Let's start there again. Listen, I wanted to say it was cut off there. He's talking about the Bob Jones University case in the 1980s. Bob Jones University forbade interracial dating on campus. And this was a big flashpoint in the early Reagan administration. They claimed to have a religious exemption to the federal law prohibiting discrimination. The Supreme Court decided no, and Bob Jones University lost their tax exemption.
In Jones' case, the court held that a college was not entitled to tax-exempt status if it opposed interracial marriage or interracial dating. So would the same apply to a university or a college if it opposed same-sex marriage?
You know, I don't think I can answer that question without knowing more specifics, but it's certainly going to be an issue. I don't deny that. I don't deny that, Justice Alito. It is going to be an issue.
Now, that's an important point. Even here, the administration's lawyer said tax exemption is going to be an issue. Think about that. That's what's at stake here. Here's another. I thought I had another segment from the arguments, but apparently not. Well, let's go ahead and listen to what they're declaring here about housing. We've got Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts.
Would a religious school that has married housing be required to afford such housing to same-sex couples?
I guess what I'd like to make three points about that, if I could, Mr. Chief Justice. I'll go right at the question you asked. The first one is, of course, this Court's ruling addresses what the states must do under the 14th Amendment. And the second point is that when you get to a question like the one Your Honor asked, that is going to depend on how states work out the balance between their civil rights laws, whether they decide that there's going to be civil rights enforcement of discrimination based on sexual orientation or not, and how they decide what kinds of accommodations they are going to allow under state law. And they could well, you know, different states could strike different balances.
Well, what about federal? It's a federal question if we make it a matter of constitutional law.
See, this is the problem we're facing. It's a question of jurisdiction. And you heard this yesterday with Justice Scalia's comments. If you make this a federal matter, which is what gay rights activists are trying to do, and, of course, we're going to have some decision at the federal level when the Supreme Court finally releases its opinion in June, if this is found to be a fundamental right, then the states are not going to have as much flexibility in dealing with it. If marriage law here is left to the states, then the states can make exemptions. So this is one thing I think you can be absolutely certain of. If you're working, say, as a chaplain for a federal government or for some sort of government position, you will probably, I would think, you're going to have to do same-sex marriages. That's the way it looks to me right now. I don't think it's true that Catholic priests will be forced to do it in their parishes, but I do think that tax exemption is going to be questioned. In fact, I'll bet on it. It's going to be questioned. How far it go, we don't know, but it's going to come up because people will say, what's different between the Catholic Church and its opposition to same-sex so-called marriage and Bob Jones University objection to interracial marriage? Well, I'll tell you, the difference is huge. Interracial marriage was never fundamental to the human order of things. It's actually it's odd. It doesn't show up through most of human history. Skin pigmentation has not had moral significance throughout the history of the human race. America's unique history of racial slavery had created certain situations in the United States that led organizations, even religious organizations, like Bob Jones University, and especially fundamentalist Protestant groups, to forbid interracial marriage. Now, marriage between a man and a woman is not a quirk of United States history, like the prohibition against interracial marriage was. No, of course not. Marriage goes back to the beginning of the human race. And thankfully, time and again you could hear the justices acknowledge that. They knew that with marriage, you're dealing with something that's very fundamental to human experience. But they still, you're going to hear people arguing that just as Bob Jones University lost its tax exemption because it wouldn't permit interracial dating, you're going to hear people say the Catholic Church should lose its tax exemption because it opposes same-sex so-called marriage. They are not the same. A marriage between a man and a woman goes back to the beginning and start of the human race. You cannot find any culture or civilization that supports same-sex marriage before 2001, where I think the Netherlands were the first to do it. Interracial marriage has been permitted throughout most of human history. Where it hasn't been permitted is the odd thing, and that was in the American South because of racial slavery. And there's another problem here, and this has been I've tried to make this point through this whole argument, and unfortunately have failed. The gay rights movement is not an extension of the black civil rights movement. And the thing that distinguishes them most, there are many distinctions, but the thing that distinguishes them most is that in the black civil rights movements, like just most social morality movements in American history, Christian conscience was essential. And whether it's the fight to outlaw abortion, the fight to abolition of slavery, prohibition, conscientious objector status, these all required Christian Catholic participation. Not same-sex so-called marriage. It's almost entirely a secular operation.
Cresta in the Afternoon is brought to you in part by CatholicBusinessPages.com, your national and local online business directory, connecting Christian business professionals with Catholic consumers. Advertisers have taken a stand to support Christian family values in the marketplace. It's important to support businesses that embrace life and promote the gospel of Christ. And at CatholicBusinessPages.com, business professionals have taken that stand. CatholicBusinessPages.com, a great place to get connected.
How do we know if our good intentions are actually doing good? What does it take to restore our nation to a free and virtuous society? Find out at Acton University, June 16th to the 19th at DeVos Place in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Acton University is a unique four-day conference that explores the intellectual foundations of a free and virtuous society. Guided by a distinguished international faculty, Acton University is an opportunity to deepen your knowledge and integrate business, philosophy, Christian theology, and sound economics. Build your own curriculum. Choose from 121 courses, ranging from theological and philosophical to policy-oriented and practical. Learn from 71 world-class faculty. Meet leading authorities on economics, theology, public policy, business ethics, and other disciplines. Equip yourself to engage culture and better articulate your understanding of the Judeo-Christian view of liberty and morality. Faith, free market, freedom, all in 4 days. Find out more at university.acton.org.
Don't miss Wild Award-nominated musical The Cross in the Light, now touring as a spectacular music concert and digital projection experience in a church near you.
You see the Stations of the Cross, and you see what happened after the cross.
I loved it.
It's awesome.
Y'all need to come see this.
21 performances, April 16th through May 16th. Buy tickets today at crossandlight.com or 734-788-7073.
Religious liberty issues will continue to be a matter of great concern in the future. The HHS mandate will go down in history as a watershed event. We are successfully beating that one back. But the very fact that it was proposed lets you know that we're going to be having problems. At the Supreme Court, they can argue about tax exemption or loss of tax exemption for religious institutions who will not perform same-sex so-called marriage. But look, this, if you don't think this kind of thing can happen, go to France. Because France has a very secular policy. You have a French public school now, who Nick pointed out earlier. There's a Muslim girl there. They won't let her attend class because she wears a long black skirt. Think about your daughters, how many of them have worn long black skirts. This 15-year-old girl has been sent home twice by school officials who say the skirt is too openly religious for secular France. Now, this girl does actually remove her veil before entering the school grounds. She can't wear the veil there at all. And this is about 150 miles northeast of Paris. And the problem is, though, they think that the long skirt shows conspicuous religious affiliation. And you just have to say to yourself, yeah, well, I know clothes do carry different meanings in different cultures. But, you know, let's say some non-Muslim student wore a long black skirt. Would that be considered religious? And the answer is no, it wouldn't be considered religious. This long black skirt is considered religious because of the people know this young lady is a Muslim. I've always said France is different than the United States. Their understanding of religious liberty is very different than the U.S. However, you hear people continually saying that the United States is behind Europe, that we're running behind Europe in understanding the relationship between religious liberty and the government. You hear people in the United States, the Obama administration has given us more of these people than we've ever seen before, who argue that America is in fact a secular government. Not a truly pluralistic government, which allows religious voices not accommodating religious voices, but a secular government, which means...
This hour of Cresta in the Afternoon is co-produced by Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Would you like a copy of this program? If you miss a part of this program or want to hear it again, Ave Maria programming can be made yours when you order. Just call 734-930-4506. Within a few weeks, you'll receive a copy of this show and any others you want to order on CD. Call 734-930-4506.
Join the Service of Jesus of the Divine Mercy for the Mission of Mercy with Archbishop Alan Vigneron, Friday, May 8th at the Divine Mercy Center. After Mass is the grand reveal and special blessing of the life-size icon of Our Lady of Guadalupe. Dinner with live music and silent auction to follow. To purchase tickets or for more information, visit sjdivinemercy.org.
This message is brought to you by Office Express. Let's all support each other. OfficeExpressNow.com.
It's everywhere you look.
You cannot walk down the street without being bombarded.
They call it a clutter crisis.
Consumers are like roaches. You spray them, and after a while it doesn't work anymore. We develop immunities.
And the multi-billion-dollar advertising industry is in a desperate struggle to break through.
We don't just come forward with what we want to sell. We engage you with things that you want.
Advertisers have blurred the line between programming and product.
Advertisers, along with the entertainment and news industries, have blurred the line between image and reality. On Saturday, May 9th, at the Ford Motor Company Conference and Event Center in Dearborn, Teresa Tamio and Al Cresta will lift the curtain on the illusion industries and how they create spiritual...